Little was said about the other members of the firm, giving the clear impression that it was a one-man show, with a squad of minions in the back rooms grappling with thousands of clients who had been gathered up on the street. There was a page with Mr. French's speaking engagements, one with his extensive trial calendar, and two pages of screening schedules covering no less than 8 drugs, including Skinny Benz, the fat pill Forrest had mentioned earlier. To better serve its clients, the French firm had purchased a Gulfstream 4, and there was a large color photo of it on the ramp somewhere, with, of course, Patton French posed near the nose in a dark designer suit with a fierce smile, ready to hop on board and go fight for justice somewhere. Ray knew that such a plane probably cost about $30 million, with 2 full-time pilots and a list of maintenance expenses that would terrify an accountant. Patton French was a shameless ego pit. The airplane was the final straw, and Ray left the library. Leaning on his car, he dialed the number for French and French and worked his way through the recorded menu. Client, lawyer, judge, other, screening information, paralegals, the first 4 letters of your lawyer's last name. 3 secretaries working diligently for Mr. French passed him along until he came to the one in charge of scheduling. Exhausted, Ray said, "I really would like to see Mr. French." "He's out of town," she said, surprisingly polite. "Of course he was out of town." "Okay, listen," Ray said rudely. "I'm only doing this one time. My name is Ray Attlee. My father was Judge Reuben Attlee. I'm here in Biloxi, and I'd like to see Patton French." He gave her his cell phone number and drove away. He went to the Acropolis, a tacky Vegas-style casino with a Greek theme, badly done, but absolutely no one cared. The parking lot was busy and there were security guards on duty. Whether they were watching anything was uncertain. He found a bar with a view of the floor and was sipping a soda when his cell phone beeped.
"Mr. Ray Attlee," said the voice.
"That's me," Ray said, pressing the phone closer.
"Patton French here. Delighted you called. Sorry I wasn't in."
"I'm sure you're a busy man."
"Indeed I am. You're on the coast?"
"Right now I'm sitting in the Acropolis, a wonderful place."
"Well, I'm headed back. Been down to Naples for a plaintiff's counsel meeting with some big Florida lawyers."
"Here we go," thought Ray.
"Very sorry about your father," French said, and the signal cracked just a little.
Probably at 40,000 feet, streaking home.
"Thank you," Ray said. "I was at the funeral, saw you there, but didn't get a chance to speak. A lovely man, the judge."
"Thank you," Ray said again.
"How's Forrest?"
"How do you know Forrest?"
"I know almost everything, Ray. My pretrial preparation is meticulous. We gather information by the truckload. That's how we win. Anyway, is he clean these days?"
"As far as I know," Ray said, irritated that a private matter would be brought up as casually as the weather. But he knew from the website that the man had no finesse.
"Good. Look, I'll be in sometime tomorrow. I'm on my yacht, so the pace is a bit slower. Can we do lunch or dinner?"
"Didn't see a yacht on the webpage, Mr. French. Must have been an oversight." Ray preferred 1 hour over coffee, as opposed to a 2-hour lunch or an even longer dinner, but he was the guest.
"Either one. Keep them both open, if you don't mind. We're hitting some wind here in the Gulf, and I'm not sure when I'll be in. Can I have my girl call you tomorrow?"
"Sure."
"Are we discussing the Gibson trial?"
"Yes, unless it's something else."
"Nope. It all started with Gibson."
Back at the Easy Sleep Inn, Ray half watched a muted baseball game and tried to read while waiting for the sun to disappear. He needed sleep, but was unwilling to tuck in before dark. He got Forrest on the second try, and they were discussing the joys of rehab when the cell phone erupted.
"I'll call you back," Ray said and hung up.
An intruder was in his apartment again. "A burglary in progress," said the robotic voice from the alarm company. When the recording went dead, Ray opened the door and stared at his car less than 20 feet away. He held the cell phone and waited. The alarm company also called Corey Crawford, who called 15 minutes later with the same report. Crowbar through the door on the street. Crowbar through the door to the apartment. A table knocked over. Lights on. All appliances accounted for. The same policeman filing the same report.
There's nothing valuable there, Ray said.
Then why do they keep breaking in?
Corey asked.
I don't know.
Crawford called the landlord, who promised to find a carpenter and patch up the doors. After the cop left, Corey waited in the apartment and called Ray again.
This is not a coincidence, he said.
Why not? Ray asked.
They're not trying to steal anything. It's intimidation, that's all.
What's going on?
I don't know.
I think you do.
I swear.
I think you're not telling me everything.
You're certainly right about that, Ray thought. But he held his ground. It's random, Corey. Relax. Just some of those downtown kids with pink hair and spikes through their jaws. They're druggies looking for a quick buck.
I know the area. These aren't kids.
A pro wouldn't return if he knew about the alarm. It's two different people.
I disagree.
They agreed to disagree, though both knew the truth. He rolled in the darkness for 2 hours, unable even to close his eyes. Around 11, he went for a drive and found himself back at the Acropolis, where he played roulette and drank bad wine until 2 in the morning. He asked for a room overlooking the parking lot, not the beach, and from a third-floor window, he guarded his car until he fell asleep.